Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green. Joining me today is Tim Sneath.
Hey, Hi
Tim.
Again, everybody. How
welcome are you back. Doing?
Thank you.
So we did part one of this two-parter a few weeks ago, where we did kind of an introduction to extensions. We created a very simple extension, and then you showed us one that you've built.
Yep.
And today, in part two, we're actually going to build that one from scratch. So
That's
we're going
right.
to go through File, New Project, and we're going to build a real live extension.
That's it, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah, as you said, we kind of have looked at how these things work. You've also had Mads, of course, on deck in the last couple of weeks doing some great examples. He is really extension royalty. If you
want to
see how to build an extension, he's the guy.
And then he has an extension that helps you build extensions.
He does.
But we didn't include that in his episode because we haven't seen
yes.
how to build them the hard way. That's what you're going to show us.
I'm going to make it look really hard.
Right. And then
totally,
we can follow
that's
up
right.
with his extension.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so we thought it'd be good to just kind of walk through the process of building something that does something a bit more meaningful, a little more hands-on, a bit more involved. So
give us a sense of what the... of how you do it, what kind of code you need to write, what object model you need to learn, how hard is this?
Right, right.
We're making it less hard, but is it still hard?
Yeah, well, the thing that we were looking at before was GitHub. And on GitHub, of course, you can create regular projects. There's also this thing called gists, I don't quite know how you say them, which are basically single files. It's a great way of just sharing a snippet with somebody else without creating a whole repo and posting stuff like that. So that's what this is. And I thought, hey, it'd be kind of handy if this was integrated into Visual Studio, right? I could take a lump of code and share it with a colleague and just create a gist or a gist.
Okay.
This could last all day out of it. So that's what I built out, just as a little kind of sample. So let's go for it. I'm just going to start from scratch. I'm going to create a new extensibility v6 project, and we'll call this Gists for Visual Studio.
Okay, now, in the past, I know we talked about this before, but just to review, in the past, in order to get this far, you would have had to have downloaded the Visual Studio SDK.
Oh, man. Yeah,
but
yeah.
in 2015, it's downloaded automatically.
Actually, yeah, so the SDK is integrated into setup. You still check it as an optional checkbox.
Right.
But it includes a whole bunch of templates and things that in the past would have been much more
challenging. And that's true in community as well?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Cool.
Yeah,
so you can not only run extensions in community, you can actually create them with community.
Indeed. So this is what comes up. It's a standard sort of boilerplate sort of template. Includes an index file and the manifest, which is, sorry, the style sheet rather, which are just nothing. They're just the how to do it stuff. So I'm just even going to delete those so they don't clutter up the thing here. Here is the manifest. I can declare some things about it, its ID. We talked through all this in the last one, so I'm just going to go and put in a description here. This extension helps you create and submit GitHub gists. Set my install targets, and here we're saying it's this one I'm writing for 2015 and above. I could obviously go back and sort of target other versions. But
and you could, if you wanted to, then change that to Pro or Enterprise.
I could change it to Enterprise if I only wanted to target Enterprise or above. Yeah. Obviously, you know, we kind of prefer that it was available more broadly.
Yeah.
This is where you put your license, the icon that represents the thing, etc. So that's all pretty straightforward. I'm going to go ahead and create out of this now a command. So I'm going to add a new item. And the item, if I go into the extensibility options here, here's my custom command. And again, lots of different things that you can create with an extension. The thing that I love about Visual Studio that just kind of blows my mind is it really is a WPF application.
Right.
If you go in and later on, maybe we'll do this, you can actually browse through the visual tree. You can see everything, right? So you can, although we've exposed a certain API and created stuff, you can really kind of spelunk in and do almost anything you want. You know, there's reflection. You can go and edit any aspect of the editor because it just they're just WPF objects, .NET objects at the end of the day.
Cool.
So we're going to start with a command, and a command is basically something that you can go and embed as a you know, obviously into a menu or right click or into the editor itself. And so we'll call this one createGist.cs. And what this does is it takes advantage of NuGet to download the various different latest reference assemblies it needs to be able to go ahead and create this. So you'll see it take a second or two. Mm-hmm. When I open it up, you'll see in the references section a list of all the various different elements that this connects in with, along with some standard boilerplate code. So here you can see, you know, here's references to visualstudio.shell, and there's versioned
elements
there's
8, behind 9, that. 10, 11, and 12.
Right, all the way up to 14.
Oh, what's up with that? So, and then there's NDTE, multiple versions of that.
So these are just where the various different, obviously, things that you're going to connect into a package. And so to create an ability to create extensions that target different versions, you can obviously decide where do I want to go on that, how far up the chain do I want to target.
But if you're just building something for 2015, you don't have to worry about it,
right? You've
got access to classes and they're in one of these references, you don't really care.
Sam Harwell, who's another kind of prolific extension author, has a really nice GitHub repo with a whole bunch of references to enable you to select those kind of things if you're trying to do this sort of multi-version environment. So that's something else to look at. We'll put a link of that later on. So those are the references, the resources. Obviously, you've got a couple of default things. That's the icon that would appear by default. Mm-hmm. Now I've got this thing here, which is the command table. This is a rather hoary piece of XML that essentially defines the various different integration points for a command into the Visual Studio environment. Okay. So you'll see a bit of GUID stuff, a bit of IDs to kind of connect in here. Somewhat self-explanatory. We probably can do a bit more work to document some of these pieces because there's kind of a nesting relationship. You have a command that is associated with various different access points.
Right.
And so here, for example, the access point for this one is the tools menu here. So that's where I'm going for this. Now I can go ahead and change that, of course. And the nice thing about this is something that comes as part of MAD's extensibility templates extension. Mm-hmm. And this enables you to, it provides essentially a good IntelliSense for the command table.
Okay.
But again, you know, a whole bunch of different sort of things that I can go for there in terms of just different menus and places that I want to kind of go and embed this. So I can choose, again, where my entry point is. Later down here, there's a few reference points for the actual name of the command itself. So we'll go ahead and call this create a new gist. Mm-hmm. And that will probably do for now. I don't think there's anything else I need to change for now. There's just a little list of the different images in my Pung file. You see there's a little overlay of the different images. Oh, okay. And I can pick out the particular one or edit the Pung file to get whatever I want into it. Okay, so there's my basic sort of lump of functionality. And as you see, when I compile it, it compiles to a V6 file. That's just the unit of packaging for these. V6 files can be per user, can be per system. If you create one that's per user, then we can auto-update it for users. So as you publish new versions to the gallery, we'll automatically pick those up and do a silent update. Per system ones don't auto-update now.
Oh, I didn't know
We're working on adding that functionality for coming.
So if you're the only one using your machine, you should pick by user and get auto-updates?
It's really about how you want, if you want a singleton instance of the extension on your machine versus a per user. But yeah, a per user extension is going to be the most seamlessly integrated into the Visual Studio environment. Yeah. So we've created our object here, and if I go into the the C# file here, you'll see here I've got a little bit of boilerplate work to go and connect this into the menuing system, and then down here at the bottom, this is the default function that gets fired as an event when you select that menu option. Mm-hmm. So what I've done is I've created a menu item that's going to appear in the tools window. And when you click on that, this is what's going to fire off. Today, or right now in this example, it's just going to throw a message box. In fact, let's just run it, just so that we kind of all see where we're at here.
And that starts up.
So it's creating the experimental instance of Visual Studio. The experimental instance is essentially an isolated instance, so you can screw things up. It doesn't screw up your core environment. You can debug into it. So you'll see right now I actually have two instances of Visual Studio loaded simultaneously. I tend to pick a different color for my experimental instance just to give me a quick visual indication of which one's which. And now if I go into this tools options, you see here's that entry I just created there. click that button, and there's the message
box. Now you've got two instances of Visual Studio running. Mm-hmm. Performance-wise, how is that?
I mean, it's running two instances of Visual Studio. Okay. If you're running on a machine with a gigabyte of memory, it's probably not going to be, you know, zip fast.
So running on our Surface Pros with 8 gigs of RAM, this is fine? We don't have any problem with that?
Okay. I mean, the biggest frustration is just the instantiation time, right? Every time you're in that repeated sort of edit debug loop, mm-hmm. you are firing up Visual Studio. Again, you see here it says experimental instance. If I go back to the other instance here, you can see, again, just for the sheer fun of it, there is the live visual tree of the process I'm debugging, which is Visual Studio. Uh-huh. If I just, for fun, just enable selection and now go back to this page here, you can see I'm literally, editing the environment here. So sometimes it's helpful when you're trying to kind of figure out, okay, where is that thing coming from? But that's all kind of.
And then can you change properties on the fly if you use the visual properties?
Well, you're now into the full, WPF debugging facilities of Visual Studio. So anything Visual Studio can do, you can do here. Okay. So, anyway, we'll turn that off because that does impede performance a little bit. Let's do something now. Let's actually go and sort of take this and create the gist itself. I'm going to add a couple more references here. I wish I could click with the right. Here we are. Add reference. And I'm going to go to the extensions tab here and add in just a couple of other things that I'm going to need to get access to for this project, because I'm going to be targeting the editor, mm-hmm. and I'm going to be using some core elements that come with Visual Studio. So I'll add a reference to core utility and add some references to the texting model. So text data, text logic, sorry, text UI, text WPF. I think those are the main ones I need. Oops, click. There we are. And that should be everything I need, I think. I'll grab logic just in case. And okay on that. And so now let's go and change this code out a little bit here. Just to save me painfully typing all this stuff. Oops, I'm going to stick in the right place. I'm going to go and use a snippet that I created earlier. If I can type, there we are. And this is just a little example of what I'm trying to do here. In this case, the work that I'm trying to get out of the Visual Studio Editor is I want to start by getting a handle on the current text code editing window.
Okay, right.
Then I can go and do some stuff with it. I can grab a selection. I can find out what the file is.
So that's the text view
associated
host
with it. Yeah. So let me just hook these up, in fact, to the usings. So I'll throw that one in there. We'll throw that one in there. Throw that one. Make sure those are all there. There we go. That's about it. So this is an object, a function I've created, which returns me a text view host. This mm-hmm. is the kind of the parent object, if you like. This is all MEF, as you know. So the way it kind of works, you start with a service provider object and you say, give me a text manager. Mm-hmm. And this is what essentially gives me the current thing that I need to work with. Within that, I'm looking at the active view. So I take a text view object here and I say, I want the one that's got current focus. Okay. Throw that in the text view object and then cast it to a user data field. Now, if I go and browse through some of these, you'll get a bit of a sense of what's going on here. So Control Shift F12. If I go to the definition of that, you'll see that these are all kind of objects that I can spelunk through, and there's a fair amount of stuff in each of these. And that's because this is real Visual Studio here. So
and
I'm
these are all
really
documented and
editing,
you can figure out what
stuff.
They all are.
There's pretty good documentation. Okay. We've got, there are elements of this that really, unless you're rewriting the editor, you're unlikely to use. But Bing Foo, Google Foo is a great way to get to what you need. There's a copious set of samples we've created to try and also make this a little more self-documenting. But yeah, you can certainly kind of splunk through and see what you're getting out of this. So ultimately, what I'm trying to get to here is, having got my user data, I want to be able to grab this text view host. And this is the object that is going to give me essentially this piece here of the screen. It's going to give me the current file that I've got open, mm-hmm. And the elements that surround it. So that gives me something I can then go work with. So having got that, now I can go and do some useful things with it. So just treat that almost as boilerplate text for the sake of argument. And so I want to be able to go and get the currently selected text out of the editor. So here, what I'm just going to do, I'm just going to create another function here. I'm going to call it private string, get selected text from editor. And I'm going to take that IWPF text view host as my parameter. And we'll make this an expression bodied member. And I'm going to go ahead and say I'm interested in that view host. And then I'm going to go and from within that broad window there, I'm interested in the text view itself, which is the actual kind of core piece, not okay. The margins, not scroll bars, nothing else from there. And then from there, I'm going to go and find the selections. Now, selection is an object that again, is going to show me what I've got selected at this point in time. And because it could be multiple elements, I'm going to say I want the first span of that selection. So if I had, three or four different selections, I can go and grab that piece. And then I'm just going to get the text from that. So okay. Little tortuous. Mm. I'm not going to sort of hide. It's a little tortuous to kind of start with this kind of broad object, mm-hmm. and get through it. But I'm working my way down the object chain from the whole Visual Studio environment to the text view host, which is the thing that's containing the current thing I'm working on. And then I'm saying, give me the selected text from that. And that's what I'm going to need to work from. I could do something else here as well, if I want to get all the text, not just the selected text, and we'll use that as well. I'll do something like get all selected, or get all text from editor. And here, instead of getting everything here, like I've done here, I'm going to grab the text view and grab the snapshot of the whole thing and say get the text for that. And okay. So now if I call that method, I'm going to get the entire raw file that I'm working with. One last thing I'm going to do here, I want to be able to get the file name. So if I publish one of these gists, I want the file name and I want something to publish against that. So I'll have one last method here, get current file name. And again, these all come off this useful view host object. And in this case, I'm going to go ahead and grab, I'm going to make this a real method. And I'm going to grab the text document object. And that one I need to grab from there. And having got that text document object, I can now go and grab the text view, go to the data model. So this is now the underpinning model behind the data there. And this contains a document buffer, which is the current document. Okay. And I can then look at the properties of that document buffer, which will give me the property that I'm looking for, which in this case is there we go, to an iText document, and out doc, which is the obviously thing I want to fill there. And I can now return the file path associated with it. So. Mm. A little painful. That's the tough bit of the demo. So right. We've grabbed the various different objects here, and I can work through those to sort of find what I'm working with. This is the challenge when you're kind of trying to deal with something that's a really pretty sophisticated object model, to navigate through that. It's not just a text box, this thing. It turns out to be a little richer than that. So, so that's the work to go and build through that. So we've got a few functions we can now use. Now we can actually start doing something interesting with it. Let's just go and use it within this callback, and we'll see if we can make this do something interesting. So we'll create one of those get current view hosts from our method. We'll find the file name, based off that view host. And we'll grab the, let's call it code to publish. And we'll choose the selected, get selected text from editor. Again, based off that view host. And for now, let's just put that in the message here. And then we can show that as a, but we'll just throw it there. And now we can run that and see the code that we've got. So here we go. Cross fingers, cross toes. Fire up Visual Studio. We've created the V6. We've deployed it to the experimental instance in its updated form. Visual Studio's second instance is now firing up. There we are. Let's go and grab a random bit of code here. So we'll grab a text, a console app, and open that up. And now I should be able to select some of that text and go to Tools, Create a New Gist.
Ooh.
Da-da-da-da!
Nice. Okay.
So we've got our code out of it.
Okay.
Okay.
Cool.
Questions?
I have a thought on an extension that I want to write.
Okay.
That starts with this. So what I do when I'm writing labs is, you know, it's now add the following code. So I need to take the code from Visual Studio and put it in a Word doc.
Right.
If you just copy and paste, and it comes over with all the formatting.
Right.
So I copy it, I open Notepad, I put it in Notepad, then I need to strip off the trailing spaces.
Yep.
I could write an extension that does all that for
me.
That
totally
just
could.
Takes a selection, strips off the trailing spaces, copies it, opens Notepad, pastes it, right?
Yeah.
Assuming that I can figure out how to paste into Notepad.
Uh-huh.
And then I'm done.
Well, of course, that's just a matter of, I mean, you just even open a new file or have a working file that you're kind of, you know, streaming.
Right. Or, even better, I don't need Notepad. I can just create a text file in Visual Studio and paste it into there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Why use Notepad? Visual Studio is the Notepad for everything.
That's right. Okay.
So you got a sense of it. And that's the beauty of this thing, right? Once you've figured out a few, admittedly, kind of little challenging, you know, lumps of code, you can deploy those in all kinds of different places. You can think of all the different other editor changes you can make here. And so we've got other projects that do things like adornments, so that you can, you know, just like we've got here, these references for the source code stuff. You can go and change stuff like that. You can analyze the text. You could, you know, recolor text based off certain.
Now, how much of that is done in the existing object model, and how much of that is done with Roslyn?
You can totally use Roslyn if what you're wanting is not to work with just the raw text, but what you actually want to deal with is a lext parsed, you know, code model.
Okay.
That's when you'd go there.
So if I just want to strip off trailing spaces, I can just do that?
You probably just do that through the editor, right? Because
it
doesn't need to have a lexical, structural understanding.
It just needs
code to do
right.
that.
Okay.
But if you remember the Duocode extension that I showed you in our first part, that one was an example where they had basically taken C Sharp and transpiled it to JavaScript.
Right.
And they used the Roslyn compiler platform to do that work rather than kind of manually.
I just want to know if the first line has eight spaces, then remove eight spaces from everything. Move everything over to the left eight, and you're done.
Right.
Okay.
So you can think of some really sort of simple, you know, swap tabs for spaces, you know, format comments across multiple lines.
Right.
There's so many different fun things you could do with an extension here, and that's
cool.
Been Mad's thing. He's done some really good sort of ideas around that. Let's hook this in to the GIST's API just to finish this example off. So, you know, again, I'm a sucker for trying to avoid doing work here because I'm not a, you know, I'm always missing something kind of crucial here. I actually spent a ton of time manually creating some code to kind of connect to the GIST's API, and then discovered that somebody had already built one. I was stupid. I didn't think on to go to NuGet ahead of time. So there's this library here, the GIST's API, written by a guy called Pierre, somebody or other, and this targets uses HTTP client to just go post regular kind of requests to this. So I've created that here. You see there's that link into that, and I can go ahead and use this. Now, a couple of things I need to do here. I need to be able to go and wire up that code instead of to show the message box to actually do something a bit more useful. So here I'm going to go ahead and create a new variable called gists client. Let's call it that just so I stick with my demo script and don't screw something up later. So I'm going to hook into that and I'm going to find the gist client object. And I need now I need my client key and my secret.
Yeah.
So I'll just go and grab those real quick from GitHub. And I'm going to go into my profile. And I'll have to reset these afterwards, because, of course, it's tough to do this without sharing them with everybody. Where are we? I always forget where this one is. It's applications. Here we are. And I actually created one here. So I'll just go and grab those there.
Now, what's your philosophy for where you store these? Because you don't want to put them in your code.
Right, right. I mean, ultimately, they are, you know, they're secrets, so you should be thinking about, you know, encrypting them in some kind of settings file, and you know, you're responsible for maintaining the security of those things. In this case, I'm, you know, I kind of don't care. I
can,
this is a demo script. By the time this video airs, hopefully I'll have remembered to revoke those. But yeah, you should obviously do something better than what I'm doing here right now. And they like a user agent sort of string to go along with that. So I guess GitHub can figure out where this is coming from. So I've got my client here. Now, what else do I need to do? I need to go and create the gist to post in the format that they expect it. And they actually expect it as a tuple, which is kind of fun. So we'll go ahead and create a new tuple. Create, and we'll use the file name that we've grabbed from here and the code to publish.
And for those that don't know what a tuple is, explain what a tuple is.
Well, a tuple is just like a pairing of objects, a key and a value, essentially. So it's kind of something you can take and use. In this case, I could create multiple files to embed within it. So that's why they're using it. I could have a gist that actually contains a number of different sub-objects. So
okay.
That's the point of that. And now I've created that, I can go and call this created gist method on the client. So gist client dot create a gist, and we'll give it a description. This case, just putting in a random description. I can choose whether it's public or not. I will say it's public. And then here's my innumerable tuple of files and code. So this is where I'll plug into that gist files object. And this is an async method, so we'll go and await that and make. Okay, and now we can show the, let's see, in the message that comes back, instead of showing the code itself, let's grab the results and grab the HTML URL out of that. That should give me the thing that I need. Okay, I think we've done the main things that we need to do there. So that's the core piece of work. But a couple of little snags here. Got some errors here. And I'll tell you the main reason I've got these errors. It's this one here. And it's because I knew this was going to happen. For once, this is an error I was expecting. It's because this is not a strongly named assembly. And by default, V6s are strongly named. So it's a little gotcha that, you know, I spent a little moment sort of suddenly trying to figure out what was going on and then realized. Two ways to fix that. Of course, you can just disable signing of the assembly. Another thing you can do is you can go and grab, and actually I'm going to do this because this is a kind of a fun tip.
The V6 needs to be strong named?
No, it's just the default way the packages are generated.
So, tell me again, the error occurred because...
Oh, sorry. When you have one assembly that's signed, then the signing chain needs to be satisfied.
Okay, so the gist assembly was signed.
Was relying on the gist's API NuGet package that was unsigned.
Okay.
And so it's like, okay, how do I connect these things together? So again, two ways to do it. You could unsign the V6. That would be non-ideal from a kind of production perspective. I'm going to go the other way, and I'm going to take that gist API package and sign it.
Okay.
Now, normally that's kind of challenging because you know, I don't own that package. I don't know the source code. But there's another little NuGet package I found that I really rather like that sort of covers this. And so in fact, let's just go to the, where are we? Oh, shoot. NuGet Package Manager console. And I'm going to go here and install this one. And it's called, so this is a good sort of little tip here, nivet.strongnaming. I'm just going to go grab this one here. And this is, say, it's a really fun little package, as much as any NuGet signing package could be fun, that takes care of this kind of problem for you. Because I can basically go and now grab this key that I've already created here. This is my, or it came with the package even, I shouldn't claim credit for it. So I'll grab that and I'll dump that in here. Let's go do import, whoops, key equals import strong name key pair. Where is it coming from? Key pair. And then I'll paste that location in. Is that right?
Strong name key pair, G name key pair.
Yeah. There we go. Oh, it was the IntelliSense took forever to come back. Thank you for picking that up. Okay, so I've now got my key object. Now I'm going to go ahead and grab the DLL itself, which is in here. And let's grab that one there. And so we'll go and grab that. Oop, that didn't work. What am I missing? Get item. Assembly equals get item. Find that for some reason. No application is specified. There we are.
Okay.
Phew. And now I can go and set the strong name on that. So assembly file, let's scroll up, is the assembly. And the key pair is the key. Boom. Okay. And so now I've signed that file. If I now go and build it, ding, 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 ding. So just a useful kind of side aside to the extensions piece. That's not about extensions, but it's a great way of taking multiple different assemblies together and going and building them.
Cool.
Now we're close, but we're not quite there. What you're going to see when I try and do this now is it's going to go through the process of trying to create the gist, but it's going to fail again. And there's a reason. Actually, I'll see if you can figure out the reason.
Yeah, we'll see what the error is, and then
it's going to be a little difficult to sort of figure it out. It's just something again. I sort of spend a bit of time working
through. Well, then I won't feel bad when I miss it.
Exactly. So I've created my client account and my secret, my ID and my secret. But if I go and grab this for a moment here and try and publish this, create a new gist. Nothing happens. Oh, there we go. So I got a 401 unauthorized message.
Unauthorized.
Yeah. What? So this is you remember.
But you have the secret and the.
Yeah. Well, this is the secret of the app, right? But I've still not validated that I am who I say I am.
Oh,
this is Tim Sneath publishing a gist. I've got to be able to say, okay, it's me. I'm doing this.
Okay.
So what we've got to do is we've got to pop a dialogue, and we can take advantage of GitHub's OAuth. Environment. I don't have to wire up everything by hand, but I have to at least pop up their OAuth dialogue so I can say it's me.
Got it.
So let's go do that.
All right.
And in the process, it's good because I can show you one little sort of thing that can sometimes trip people up when they create UI within extensions. So I'm going to right click here. I'm going to add a new item, just as you'd think. The one thing that's kind of interesting, if I go to the WPF tab here, all I have is the user control. There's no window object. No window class. So I have to go and essentially you can do it. You just have to adjust the user control to turn it into a window. So we'll go and do that. We'll take this user control. We'll call this auth dialog, I guess, .xaml. And here we are. Here's my user control. I'm going to rewire this, turn it into a window. So take that user control, not windows, window, just the one. And there's my control there. I need to go back into the code behind as well and change this from a user to a window.
Okay.
Let's go make sure that all the references are in place. We've got all the standard ones there. I'm going to go and add a reference to XAML. So let's just go and make sure that that one's in there as well. Now that we're running this as a window. Okay. And it'll just take a second. Sometimes this is a little kind of tricky. We'll probably do some work, I think, to try and improve some of these templates and make this a little bit easier. But as I mentioned, did I mention earlier on, we have this thing called Gitter. I'm not sure if we talked about this. I want to just share, this is another thing. So we have this this chat room for all extensibility work, and we've got various folk from the engineering team sitting on this a lot of the day, just as a kind of a chat window in the background. So if you're hitting these kind of issues and you hit challenges, you can go right here, and this is gitter.im, and search for the extend VS repo. And this is just a permanently staffed sort of as much as any of us around. You can see here we've got a ton of different things, just even as we've been presenting here, a ton of different kind of comments and questions. So love to have folk there. We'll make sure that that place is available. Anyway, so I've created my window. Let's just go and build and make sure that compiles, because it'd be embarrassing if it didn't compile. And that looks okay. So let's go into here. I need to just reload the designer. There we are. And let's put in here, we've just got a grid right now. We'll dump in a web browser. And that will be the control that will present that component. So we'll name that, we'll just call it web browser. And when it loads the content, we'll have it trigger off an event handler. So that's that. In the code behind, I'm going to ultimately get an auth code that I can use to authenticate. So we'll go in here and we'll create ourselves a property, and we'll call that auth code. I'm hitting a control issue there. Public string auth code. Okay. So now let's just put a little bit of code in here, and I created a snippet to save us having to do this. Watch me typing laboriously by hand. What this snippet does is it goes and grabs the URI and grabs the result based off that and sets the dialog result appropriately. So should be okay. That's everything I need, I think, from there. I just need to grab it out and do something with it from the gist side. So let's go back in here. Before we actually create the gist, let's instantiate that dialog. So authorization dialog. Let's create a new one of those. And from within there, I will go navigate. Now, where does this web browser go? Well, it goes to the place that the gist API says is my endpoint for OAuth authentication.
Okay.
So I'm just going to navigate that straight to that point, and that is gistclient.authorize.
So that's all built into the gist client.
Right. So I don't have to create myself a text box.
And you use the Git UI, so it doesn't look like you created your own dialog asking for username and password.
Exactly.
It's trustworthy.
Yeah. Cool. So we'll show that dialog we've created. Based off the results of that, we'll have the auth code we can now embed. And so let's do that. We'll just grab the dialog results equals true, and we need to cast that to a Boolean. Oops. There we go. And then we'll just go ahead, and now we can go ahead and await an authorization of the auth based off the dialog auth code. So all I have within my code is that auth code. It's the only I actually even get access to myself. From within this environment. Let's build it. I'm not sure if I'm feeling brave or not here.
I'm optimistic.
And do you know what? I'm going to walk off the camera, breaking one of the cardinal rules here, because I've got my machine set up with two-factor authentication, so I actually need to have my phone turned on so that it can give me the auth prompt when it appears. So we'll just let my phone boot up at the same time as this occurs. That's just fine. We'll go into our console application. Mm-hmm. And we're going to grab some lump of code again. I feel like we need to do something a bit better here. So we'll put in, hi, Robert, how are you? And we'll grab that code here. We'll choose to create a new gist. here comes a web browser.
Nice.
And there it is. So I can put in my username here and my password. Click sign in. Yeah, whatever. And up pumps my two factors. So even things like that that are built in work. So I'll pop in my authenticator app here, grab my magic two-factor auth code, 475639, hit verify, and ta-da-da!
Yay!
Yay! I'm so excited, right. So excited. So let's go and dump that into something useful where I can go and check that out. Control C, if you ever, you know, sure everybody knows this, but Control C always works for grabbing the contents of a message box. So we could have done a much neater job here. I could have created my own custom box with a hyperlink URL, etc. But just for purposes of what is a still fairly long demo, I'll just go with that and go to that location. And there we are. We have taken from Visual Studio, grabbed some code,
excellent.
We've created a gist out of it, and we've posted it into a gist that is live, authenticated on the platform with username.
All right.
Oh, there we are.
That's a real live extension.
It's a real live extension. That's how it works. It's you know, a bit of work, but here we're doing real work. We're doing using the real objects and doing the real models here.
Yeah. So now it's just a question of learning the object model.
Exactly that.
Learn the various pieces, and the more you learn, the more you'll be able to do.
I'll post that one up on the on GitHub as a repo, so others can look at it. There's another one I'll post up as well, which is the one I mentioned right at the start. I've been playing around a little bit with tool windows, because that's another thing you often want to do is to put something at the bottom there. And so this is a similar kind of thing. This one takes Pastebin pastes and goes and uses the API there for this one. And it does drag and drop and a few other things like that. So this is another little sample that will give folks some inspiration.
Cool. So you had mentioned earlier that there are a bunch of samples.
Yes.
So we'll put up a link
lots
to those
of samples. Lots
on
of
the
samples.
Show description.
Yes.
And a link to the Gitter
the repo.
Site.
Yes, the Gitter IAM.
Cool. Yeah.
So, thank you, Robert. Appreciate
the
time.
Thank
that was
you.
The in-depth level 300
cool.
version
It's very doable.
It's doable.
It's
totally doable.
Yeah.
Totally doable. And the key is just coming up with a great idea, right?
Right.
For what you can do.
Right.
Mads just pumps ideas out like crazy.
Yeah.
Why don't I be able to, it'd be great if I could open a command line from this place. Oh, I'll just
Yeah, it doesn't have to be anything extravagant.
Some of these extensions are 3 lines of code.
Yeah.
Literally 3 lines of code beyond the boilerplate.
Just something that you wish was in the product, you can write it and add it yourself and share it with others.
Yeah, totally.
Cool.
Hey, thank you.
Right.
Appreciate
awesome
your time.
Stuff.
Thanks, guys.
See you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.